Jeffrey Benton Howe and his partners already knew of the fiasco in the jail. Miguel Sierrez and Dalton Wade were fuming while Jeffrey Benton Howe tried to calm his partners and get some positive thoughts out of them about a bit of news just delivered. The bearer of the good news, Axel Gunderson, watched the two would-be tycoons vent their spleens with mild amusement. At last, he spoke into the silence after their tirade.
Yeah, Sir Jeffrey, it is exactly like I say. The gold is there, true enough. Make no mistake about that. Some of it is exposed on the surface. The problem is getting it out.
Makes sense, Senor. Didn't you just say that gold was to be found on the surface? What's to make it difficult getting it out?
Approximately 800 very angry White Mountain Apache warriors.
Yes, Miguel, there is the small difficulty of getting around the Apaches.
What's the problem with that?
May I remind you, the gold is on their land.
Land that they've got no goddamned right to. What do those stupid savages know about gold?
Well, they do know that we white men desperately want the yellow rocks, as they call the gold. That we go absolutely mad over possessing it.
Well, there you go. To those stinking Apaches, they're just rocks. If people can't appreciate what they have on their land, it should be taken from them.
Which we are in the process of doing. Here, take some brandy and relax. Well, Gunderson, you've done a fine job. Your compensation will be in keeping with your achievements.
Good. I expect no less. Now, all you need to do is follow through with the politicians.
During the hours of his watch, Smoke Jensen had thought through the situation in which he found himself. The previous day had been given over to surviving long enough to examine conditions and options. Now, he announced the result of his deliberations over breakfast.
Fellas, we're gonna split up.
Was it something I said?
No, Walt. We could stick together and run that posse ragged. But in a way, that's spinning a wagon wheel over a gorge. Someone needs to get word to the Sugarloaf. Ty, I'm gonna leave that up to you.
Well, I'd rather ride beside you, Smoke.
I know you would. But Sally has to hear about this from someone on our side. Besides, it might be we'll need help from the other hands before this is over. Or from Monte Carson. Walt, I want you and Rip to head back to Arizona. Contact Jeff York, the ranger captains we sold those horses to. Tell him what's going on, and ask if he knows what's behind it.
Want us to bring him here?
It's out of his jurisdiction, Walt. But if he offers, carry him along.
I got the feeling there's gonna be hell to pay before long.
Smoke came to his boots and put a hand on Walt's shoulder.
You're right, and I aim to see the ones paying it, or Sheriff Reno and his posse. I'm heading on. Lead your horses up the trail a ways in the direction you're going, then wipe out every sign of this camp.
Keep a wall to your back, Smoke.
I will, whenever I can.
Hell, this ain't getting us anywhere, Sheriff.
Jake Reno considered that a moment.
Hold up! You're right, Hub. We ain't seen a sign of them in hours. Might be we're following the wrong trail. What we need to do is fan out. Follow every game and people path heading south. I know it in my bones that Smoke Jensen is headed towards Horse Springs. There's a telegraph there, and he can get help if he wants it.
What would any wanted man go into a town for?
Oh, for Christ's sakes, Hub, it's not like he really killed...
Reno realized what he was about to say, and he bit off the words. Two of the citizens of Sicaro exchanged nervous glances. Doubt wrinkled the brows of several others.
Listen up! This whole affair's gone too damn far! Check out everything that moves, and if you see Jensen, shoot to kill!
That night, Smoke Jensen ghosted through the trees in a low ground mist that had drifted in around 3 a.m. Only his wranglers had left the northern slopes of the Cibola Range. Smoke had kept his place, expecting to catch Sheriff Jake Reno off guard. Smoke cut his eyes to the left. Only a second passed before his keen vision marked the shape of two heads close together. The sheriff had been smart enough to put out pickets, but he had not been too smart about who he assigned the duty to, Smoke reckoned. The mountain man had exchanged boots for moccasins earlier, and now he moved with utter silence. Half a dozen carefully placed strides brought him up behind the unwary pair. One of the posse men fished the makings out of a vest pocket. When he started to roll a quirly, Smoke Jensen reached out with two big, hard hands to the sides of the duo's heads and slammed them together. He made quick work of binding their hands and feet together with short lengths cut from a rope he had taken off another inattentive sentry earlier. Smoke stuffed the neckerchiefs of the unconscious men into their mouths. Satisfied with his work, he moved on. A surprisingly short distance inside the camp, he came upon a line of picketed horses. A reassuring pat on the muzzles of the critters gained their silence, while Smoke undid their reins from the tightly stretched lariat that served as an anchor. A sudden cold thought speared at him. This was entirely too goddamn easy.
I figured you'd come looking for us, Jensen. So I left you a few tidbits to whet your appetite.
Smoke Jensen turned to Reno and made a draw in one smooth motion. Jake Reno had never seen anything like it. One second he was looking at Smoke Jensen's back. A split second later, Jensen faced him, the black hole of a .44 muzzle settling in on the lawman's belly. Without conscious direction, Reno's body took over, flexed at the knees, and he flew backward into the sharp thorns of a clump of blackberry bushes. Smoke's .44 spat fire before Reno could even think to trigger his. Hot lead cut a shallow trail across the upper curve of the sheriff's buttocks. The horses took off at a run, and so did Smoke Jensen.
God damn it! Smoke Jensen shot me in the ass!
Where are you, Sheriff?
I'm in the goddamn blackberry patch!
Smoke figured he'd give him time to settle down some before he hit him again. Soon, five of Quint Stalker's gang, who had ridden with the posse, paused at the dark entrance to a side canyon. Not even the full moonlight could penetrate the gorge. Under the frosty starlight, they cut uncertain glances at one another.
Don't know why the hell the sheriff wants us checking this out in the middle of the night.
Says he's got a hunch. He asked me, it's indigestion prodding his belly.
Or he shot a butt stinging.
Blackberry thorn still stuck in his hide.
At the rear end of the loose formation, the last man saw a brief flicker of movement right before his eyes. Then a loop tightened and pinned his arms to his sides above the elbows. The others turned in time to see him disappear from the saddle.
What the hell? Hub, where are you?
But Hub wasn't saying anything. He was too busy sucking on the barrel of a .44 in the hand of Smoke Jensen. Smoke gave an unseen nod of satisfaction and bent low to whisper in Hub's ear.
You, Hub?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Hub. You want to stay alive? You keep real quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Smoke removed the steel tube from Hub's mouth.
I'm going to tie your legs together and string you up that tree.
You said I could live.
String you upside down, Hub, and you will live if you give me 5 minutes to get clear of this place. Then you can yell your fool head off.
Hub Peters had no problem believing anything Smoke Jensen had just told him. He felt the rope circle his ankles and the tension increase. The tight band around his chest eased off, and he swung free of the ground.
Did you see that? Where in the hell did he go?
I don't know, but it's some more bad news from Smoke Jensen. Count on it.
We going in after Hub?
Are you crazy? Want to wind up disappearing before your friend's eyes?
Well, Hub, gotta go now. Remember, 5 minutes. Oh, and nice friend you have, Hub. If I was you, once I was let down, I'd like me a shuck for someplace far, far away from them.
Smoke headed out. Silently, Hub Peters agreed with Smoke Jensen. The next morning, the jittery posse men sat around a campfire. Blue granite coffee pot leaped from the fire. Boiling liquid flew everywhere. Three hard cases brought up by the sheriff to keep the townies in line were scalded by the hot brew. They tore at their shirts and trousers in an effort to escape their torment, unmindful of the danger. Most of the others had already bellied down in the dirt. This time, one of Quint Stalker's gunnies was hit with a bullet through his right thigh. He flopped in the dust while his companion skittered off to find better cover.
God damn you, Smoke Jansen!
Sheriff Jake Reno shook a fist above the boulder behind which he sheltered. Whoa! A bullet whipped past his knuckles, close enough for him to feel its heat. He shut up and hunkered down. No one moved for 15 minutes. Two of Stalker's hard cases came out in the open first.
Shit. We best go look for a trail.
What for? It'd only lead to another damn ambush.
Reno shot up from behind his boulder.
Damn you! You're my deputies now, and you do as I say! Get on your horses and go out there and hunt down Smoke Jansen!
Temporary deputy sheriff. And right about now, I'm figuring that temporary time has run out.
You're not leaving.
I sure ain't gonna stand around and get shot at by a man who don't miss lest he wants to.
You're a coward, that's what you are.
Eyes narrowed with sudden anger, the hard case faced off with the sheriff.
Now, I don't exactly take kindly to that, sheriff. Y'all wanna back up them bad-mouthing words with gunplay?
Reno realized he'd gone too far.
Not at all. I spoke out of hand. You go if you want. Besides, I need someone to take a message to our mutual friend.
You mean Quint?
Sheriff Reno winced.
You tell him what's going on and have him send some more men.
Don't reckon he'll be able to do that. We've got other irons in the fire.
Damn it, man. Nothing's more important than stopping Smoke Jansen. Just carry the message and I'll be satisfied.
Sure enough, Sheriff.
The hard case headed for his horse. He made it three quarters of the way there, too. The bullet from Smoke Jansen took him in the meaty point of his left shoulder. Bloody froth from a punctured lung came from skinned back lips as he went to the ground.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
To those around, Sheriff Reno, those words sounded like a prayer. What it was the last straw. Sheriff Reno was left with little choice. He pulled in his horns.
Jansen! No more! I'm done! Jansen! You hear me? We're through! We're leaving!
Smoke made no reply. The men eventually got the courage to come out of hiding, pack up camp, and mount their horses for the ride back to Saguaro. Only 11 men remained with the posse when the corrupt lawman gave up his search for Smoke Jansen. Smoke watched him go. Faint signs of amusement lightened Smoke's face as he gazed down a long slope at the retreating backs. One leg cocked over the pommel of his saddle, he reached into his shirt pocket for a slender, rock-hard cigar and struck a lucifer on the silver chasing of his saddle horn. Thin, blue-white stream of aromatic smoke wreathed the head of Smoke Jansen. Walt Reardon had thoughtfully provided the cigars, among other supplies the hands had obtained when they planned to get Smoke out of the Saguaro jail. These were of Italian origin and strong enough to stagger a bull buffalo. Not exactly Smoke's brand of choice, but it would have to do. Now, he would have to make tracks soon. South and west would be best. That would put him closer to Arizona when Ty Hardy and Walt Reardon brought word from Jeff York. Smoke Jansen had met Jeff York a number of years ago. The young Arizona Ranger had been working undercover against the gang and outlaw stronghold of Rex Davidson, same as Smoke was. When each learned the identity of the other, they joined their lots to bring down the walls of every building in Davidson's outlaw town of Dead River and exterminate the vermin that lived there. As he rode down out of the northern reaches of the Cibola Range, Smoke Jansen recalled that day long past.
Ah, the good old days.
Five hard-faced men paid a visit to the widow Tucker and her three small children. Their leader, Forrest Gore, had been barely able to stand in the saddle on the long ride out from Sicaro.
Hello, the house!
Speak your peace!
The woman's voice came from inside the house, behind the protection of shuttered windows.
You, Miss Tucker!
I am.
And I have a message for you. You've 48 hours to pack up and get off the place.
I thought I'd made it plain enough before. We are not leaving.
Oh, but you got to now, Miss Tucker. You see, your late husband, rest his soul, sold the ranch the day he was murdered by that back-shooting scum, Smoke Jensen. No doubt he was killed for the money he carried.
The ranch door opened and Martha stepped boldly across the threshold.
I don't believe you.
Afraid you're gonna have to, Miss Tucker.
Forrest Gore politely tipped his hat in acknowledgement.
Not without proof. Lawrence didn't take the title deed with him to town. He couldn't have sold and he didn't have any intention of doing so. Now please leave.
Sorry you see it that way, Miss Tucker. But we got our orders. 48 hours, not a second more. Pack what you can and get out. The new owner will be moving in directly.
We won't budge until I see the bill of sale and a transfer of title.
That's mighty uppity lawyer talk coming from a woman. A woman's place is to do as she's told. Might be your health would remain a whole lot better if you did just that.
Meaning what?
Your husband's done already got himself killed over this place. Could be it might happen to you next.
Jimmy?
Martha reached back through the open door. Her son handed her a greener shotgun, which she leveled on the center of Forrest Gore's chest. She reared back both hammers.
Get the hell off our land and tell whoever sent you that next time I'll shoot first and ask questions after. My oldest son's a crack shot too, so there'll be plenty of empty saddles.
You wish you'd done what's right while you still had the chance. Let's ride. Yeah!
Smoke Jensen rode into Horse Springs quietly. He attracted little attention from the locals, mostly simple farmers of Mexican origin. Near the center of town was a rock basin fed by cold, crystal-clear, deep mountain springs. This natural formation provided drinking water for everyone in town. Fortunately for the farmers, a wide, shallow stream also meandered through the valley and allowed for irrigation of crops of corn, beans, squash, chili peppers, and other staples. Smoke splashed through it at a rail-guarded ford. Small brown-skinned boys, naked as the day they'd been born, played in the water. They made shy, though friendly, waves of their hands. Returning their greetings, Smoke rode on to the center of town. On the Plaza de Armas, he located what passed for a hotel in Horse Springs. Posada del Norte, Inn of the North, had been hand-lettered in red, now fading pink, and outlined in white and green over the arch in an adobe block wall that guarded the building's front. He dismounted and walked his horse through the tall, double-hung plank gates into a tree-shaded courtyard. A barefoot lad took the reins and led Smoke's big-chested roan toward a stable. Smoke entered a high-ceilinged, remarkably cool hallway. To his right, a sign, likewise in Spanish, with black letters on white tile, advised Oficina. Smoke stepped through into the office, and he had to work mightily to conceal his reaction. Behind a small counter, he saw one of the most strikingly beautiful young women he had ever encountered. Her skin was flawless. A light cast of olive added a healthy glow to the faintest of café au lait complexions.
Yes, senor? Do you desire a room for the night?
Yeah, for a week at least.
We are happy to be able to accommodate you, senor. If you will please to sign the book.
When Smoke had done so, she continued her familiar routine of hospitality.
The rooms down here are much cooler, but the second floor offers privacy.
Accustomed to the refreshingly cool summer days in the high lonesome, Smoke Jensen opted for a first floor room. The beautiful desk clerk nodded approvingly and selected a key. She turned back to Smoke and extended a hand comprised of a small, childlike palm and slender, graceful fingers.
When Felipe returns with your saddlebags, he will show you to your room.
Oh, I think I can manage on my own.
It is a courtesy of the Posada del Norte. We wish that our guests feel they are our special friends.
Just at that moment, Felipe came rushing in.
Come with me, senor.
Do you work here every day, Felipe?
Oh, sí, senor. After school is over at the mediodía. It is my father's posada.
Would you rather be out swimming with your friends at the creek?
After my early chores, I get to go for a while. Until the people come for rooms, and my father rings the bell to call me back. Sometimes, when I'm supposed to be cleaning the stable, I slip away and also go on adventures. This is your room, senor.
Felipe unlocked the door with a flourish and ushered Smoke inside. Smoke pressed a silver dime into the boy's palm.
You remind me of my sons when they were your age.
Your sons were Mexicano?
No, but they were every bit as impressive as you.
Oh, perhaps you are hungry for word of what is happening in the world, yes? I will bring you a newspaper.
Thank you, Felipe. That'd be fine.
Smoke settled in. The paper turned out to be a week-old copy of the Albuquerque Territorial Sentinel. Most of the front-page articles had to do with the financial panic in the East and events in and around the largest city in the territory. Smoke read on. The second page provided at least a part of the answer to his dilemma, although he didn't realize it at the time.
Surveyors to lay out westward route.
Smoke Jensen scanned the story. It revealed that survey crews would soon arrive to begin laying out the right-of-way for a new spur of the Southern Pacific Railroad. It would pass through Saguaro and head westward to connect with Springerville, Arizona, Winslow, and the copper smelters being built south and west of Sholo.
I guess that's interesting to someone who's got stock in the railroad, or the right copper works.
But that story didn't seem nearly as relevant as the small article Smoke saw on the third page, which featured an artist's sketch of Smoke's own likeness and a story about the supposed murder of Mr. Lawrence Tucker. From it, he gleaned that Tucker had been a long-time and respected resident of the Saguaro area, with a large ranch on the eastern slopes of the Cibola foothills. He was survived by a wife, Martha, and three children, boys aged 13 and 7, and a girl, 9. Tucker had been outspoken about the prospects of dry land farming and used the techniques of the Mexican and Indian farmers, long-time residents of the area. He also advocated the protection of those fields by the use of barbed wire.
Not a very popular position for a rancher to take. That's gotten more than half 100 men killed over the past decade. Maybe Mr. Tucker had enemies nobody knew about. Maybe someone, like Sheriff Reno, knew only too damn well who those enemies might be.
Early on the afternoon of the third day in Horse Springs, Smoke began to feel uneasy. A week had gone by since they had ridden out of Saguaro. By now, he should have heard from Walt Reardon and Ty Hardy. He would give them a couple of more days, and then he was heading west. With that settled, he decided to stroll out for a beer, but he found trouble looking him straight in the eye as soon as he walked out of the inn. The two men stood in the middle of the street, hands on the butts of their six guns.
By God, you're right, Zach. It's him all right.
Yeah, Smoke Jensen. And we got us a tidy little reward coming, Jeremy.
Smoke Jensen marked them to be local range riders, but with a few differences that could make them dangerous. For instance, the way they wore their six guns, slung low on their legs, holsters tied down with a leather thong. The safety loops had been slipped free of the hammers. The weapons were clean and lightly oiled, all the cartridges in their loops shiny bright. No doubt they fancied themselves good with their guns, Smoke figured. They had silver conchos around the sweatbands of their hats, sewn on their vests, and down the outside seam of their left trouser legs. Almost a uniform in the Southwest for young, tough guy punks. Seems these boys had read the same newspaper he had seen, Smoke figured. But the reward was something new.
Don't believe everything you read, fellas.
We'll believe this right enough. You're Smoke Jensen, and there's $1,000 on your head.
Not by the law. So there's no guarantee you'd get the reward if you live to collect it.
What do you mean by that?
Look, if I am Smoke Jensen, the likes of you two can't take me. Not in a face-on fight.
I ain't no back shooter, and I think we can.
Smoke let Jack and Jeremy get their hands on their irons before he hauled his .44 clear of leather. Jeremy's eyes widened. It caused him to falter, and he didn't have his weapon leveled when he pulled the trigger. A spout of street mud fountained up a yard in front of Jeremy's boot toe. Although a hard, violent man when he needed to be, Smoke Jensen took pity on the young gunny. He shot him in the hip. Jeremy went down, the streamlined Merwin and Hulbert flew from his hand, and he clutched his wound with desperation. Smoke shifted his attention to Zack. Zack's jaw sagged in disbelief. He saw eternity beckoning to him from the black muzzle of Smoke Jensen's Colt.
No!
He tried feverishly to trigger a round. For this one, Smoke had no mercy. He had taken note earlier of the notches carved in the walnut grip of Zack's six gun. That told a lot about Zack. No real gun hawk notched his grips to keep score. Killing men was not a game. They didn't give prizes for the one with the most chips whittled out. The only thing that came from winning was the chance to live a little longer. Smoke Jensen knew that well. He'd been taught by an expert. He punched a new belly button in Zack's vulnerable flesh. Zack hit hard on his butt in the middle of the street. He had somehow managed to hold on to his Smith American. He raised it now. A .44 shot past the left shoulder of Smoke Jensen.
It didn't have to kill him.
He pushed. I pushed back.
Despite his misery, Jeremy had managed to work free his sheath knife. He held it now by the blade. It caught Smoke low. The tip slid through the thick leather of his cartridge belt and penetrated a stinging inch into meat. Hot lead punched a thumb-sized hole between Jeremy's eyebrows. It mushroomed and blew off the back of his head. Smoke eased up, let his shoulders sag. He surveyed the carnage he had created. This spelled more complications than he wanted to think about. He reloaded swiftly.
No question about it. I'm in more trouble than before.
Smoke looked up to see a small, fat man in a bartender's apron standing outside of the cantina watching him.
The law will be coming soon. Tell him the man who did this is long gone.
There's very little law in this town, senor. Only the alcalde, the mayor, who's also the jefe, the marshal, and also the juez. El magistrado. Comprende?
I reckon I do. You're saying you have a one-man city administration?
Si!
Where do I find this fella?
A broad, warm smile bloomed on the man's face.
It is I, senor.
Well, that made matters considerably less complicated for Smoke Jensen. Smoke gave his opinion on what had sparked the attempt on his life, and the mayor, police chief, judge didn't even ask if they had the right man.
There are no laws. This is not the first time they have provoked trouble. But it is the first time they have been on the receiving end. You are free to go, or stay as long as you wish, senor.
I believe I'll pull out tomorrow morning.
.46 miles into Arizona, Smoke Jensen discovered why he had not been joined by his companions. Walton Tye waited for him in Sholo, along with Jeff York. Smoke and the Arizona Ranger had a rousing, back-pounding reunion, and the four men retired to the saloon made famous by the poker game that had given the new name to what had once been called Copper Gulch. A drifter had played cards all through one night with the local gambler and owner of the town. His luck had run well, and on the turn of a card in a game of lowball, he'd won title to Copper Gulch, which he promptly renamed Sholo in honor of his accomplishment. Or, so the story goes.
What is this about you being wanted for killing a man, Smoke?
It's a long story, Jeff. Just yesterday I found out there's a price on my head. A big one.
Smoke went on to explain what he faced.
So with a reward out, I figure that sheriff will be out hunting me again, and decided Arizona would be a safer place to stay while I worked it all out.
I'll cover for you here in Arizona, of course. And I'd like to help as much as I can.
Well, how's that? The governor got his hand cinched up to your belt?
Not so's it chafes. I was up this way to check out something when Walt and Ty came along. So far, it's only rumors. Still and all, The ones putting them around are considered reliable men. Appears there's some scallywags that have their eyes on a land grab on the White Mountain Apache Reservation.
Do tell.
The word is that some high rollers are fixing to bring a number of the big tickets in Washington out to be wined and dined. And bribed. To get them to cut a big chunk out of the Indian reservation for the benefits of those same local money men.
Why in the world would anyone want to move in next door to the Apaches?
Perhaps it's because Chief Cachillo Negro and some of his braves have found gold on that land. And of course, it might be that these good old boys have gotten a serious dose of religion and only want to make better the lot of their less fortunate red brothers.
I believe that when pigs fly.
There's six more rangers headed this way. I'm supposed to direct it all and also get a man inside his consortium.
You wouldn't be electing me to that position, would you, Jeff?
Jeff York shrugged. As tall as Smoke and nearly as broad, that gesture moved a lot of hard-muscled flesh. His big hands spread on the table and thick fingers reached for a fisheye whiskey glass.
Nah, I reckon to do that myself.
I recall the last time I knew you went undercover.
We sure shot the hell out of Rex Davidson's Dead River, didn't we?
And you damn near got yourself killed before you could get to the doing.
Water under the bridge. We're still here, both of us. Now, maybe I had ought to make myself useful. First off, I'll fill you in on who's who around Sicaro.
You rangers keep an eye on folks from another territory?
It's good practice to know the influential folks. And also the bad hombres and riffraff. All part of the job. First off, there's the Culverts and the Mendozas. About the richest ranchers around. Old Myron Culvert's son is mayor.
Jeff went on to list the power structure of Sicaro, New Mexico.
Then there's some who are sort of on the edge. There's an Englishman. Folks say he's a lord or something. They call him Sir Jeffrey Benton Howell. He owns a couple of large ranches, two saloons, a woman's millinery store, and a number of houses he rents out to the Mexican workers. He's partnered up with Miguel Sierras. Sierras looks like one of those bullfighter fellers. Neat and trim, a handsome dog. But we've heard word he's got a mean streak.
What about hard cases?
I'm coming to that. Big frog in the pond over that way is Quint Stalker. Supposed to be a gunfighter from Nevada.
I know him. He crossed my path one time. I should have killed him then.
He's for sure bad news then?
Bet on it, Jeff.
All right. He's got a gang, maybe 30 fast guns. There's talk he takes his pay from Benton Howell. If that's so, we could be in heavy trouble. The Lord and Sierras have been buying up parcels of land in New Mexico and Arizona for some time now. Most of them are out in the middle of nowhere. With the money, land, and the guns to back them up, they could become a power to reckon with. Only, why such remote spots?
Smoke recalled the article he had read about surveyors for the Southern Pacific.
Would those parcels be anywhere near the proposed right-of-way of the new Southern Pacific Spur Line?
It was as though a lamp had been lit behind the eyes of Jeff York.
They sure would.
Water and coaling stops make great places for towns to be built. The man, or men, who own one, or in this case, all of those, will get mighty rich.
Where did you come up with that?
I read about it in the Albuquerque newspaper. I wonder now, if the railroad intends to cross land owned by the late Mr. Tucker.
I wouldn't doubt it any. I think you waiting out more developments here might be a mistake, Smoke.
I'm way ahead of you. I reckon we should all head back to Sicaro and dig into the affairs of Sir Jeffrey Benton Howell.
Ma, wake up. There's someone moving around outside. I saw him through my bedroom window.
Martha sat up in her bed.
Could you make out who, Jimmy?
No, ma'am.
Martha climbed from the bed in the room off the central part of the house. She crossed the living dining room area of her house in darkness, every inch familiar to her. She took up the greener and slung a leather bag of shot shells over one shoulder. She reached a window just as a yellow-orange brightness flared in the barnyard. Jimmy, his bare feet flashing below the helm of his nightshirt, went unerringly to the gun rack on the near wall. Martha almost blurted out a refusal. Then she drew her lips into a thin line.
You be careful, son.
Yes, ma'am.
Jimmy took his rifle and a spare box of shells and went back to the loft where he slept. The window that overlooked the barnyard had been installed on a pivot with latches to both sides. Jimmy undid them and turned the sash sideways. Slowly, he eased the barrel of his Stevens out into the night. Then he remembered his father's training. He stuck a small finger in the loading gate and felt the base of a cartridge. Satisfied, he slowly worked the action to keep as quiet as he could. Three more torches burned now out there, and so far none of the night riders had noticed anything happening in the house. The torchbearers started toward the barn. By the light of the firebrands, Martha and Jimmy saw that they wore hoods that covered the entire head. When they reached a point about 50 feet from the barn, Martha, downstairs, let loose. Jimmy followed her lead. One arsonist pitched off his mount, one arm and shoulder peppered with number two goose shot. Another swayed in his saddle a moment, then sank forward to lay along the neck of his horse. Jimmy levered another round into the 30-30. Good thing he did, because a second later, two of the hooded thugs turned toward the house and fired at the ground floor windows. Jimmy shot one of them through the shoulder. From downstairs, his maw's shotgun sounded.
I'm hit! Oh, God, I'm hit, Smoke!
Burn that barn, goddammit! You boys go after the corral! Turn out that livestock! We're being shot at! I'll take care of that!
The rider turned toward the house. He caught the side edge of a column of shot in his left biceps and shoulder. He fired his six gun dry and wheeled away. Another man took his place. Jimmy blew him out of the saddle. Flames began to flicker in the barn. Jimmy brushed tears from his big blue eyes. A dozen young heifers made thunder with their hooves as the night riders swung open the corral gate and ran them off.
We've done enough for now. Let's pull out!
Several ranch hands who had been held impotent at gunpoint rushed out now and began hurling buckets of water on the blazing barn. Martha stepped out into the night. She watched and knew it would do no good.
Our fine, beautiful barn destroyed by that bastard Smoke Jensen.
But then a smile broke through her outrage.
But I got pellets in him. He'll be bandaged up after this. Not so cocky anymore. And the next time I see him, I'll kill Smoke Jensen.
A hot, dry wind blew steadily across the mesa, even at this early hour. A low pole frame sat well back from the rim, protected from the view of unwelcome eyes. It consisted of a lattice framework covered with the thick green leaves of the century plant. Already five of the lesser chiefs of the White Mountain Apaches had gathered. They waited in patient silence for the arrival of their principal chief, Cuchillo Negro, Black Knife. Long before their composure had been well tested, 10 of the best warriors among the Tende approached soundlessly from as many directions. At last, when the sun rode high overhead, Cuchillo Negro appeared. With him was Hotan, his most trusted advisor.
Why do the white men come into our land, Cuchillo Negro?
Cuchillo Negro considered the question in silence a long time before he answered.
It is true that many come to our mountains. Words spoken on the wind say that they covet what little they left to us, Broken Horn.
Hotan nodded.
That could be true. It is the best of any of our agencies.
The whites, who are always greedy, must think it is too good for us. They seek to send us back to San Carlos.
Yes, they do.
You are right to be angry, my brothers. But we must be cautious while we go about finding out what is behind this.
No! I say we drive them off the agency. I say we follow those who survive and take the warpath to all whites.
Like Geronimo.
They all knew the fate of the famed and feared warrior chief. He was said to be rotten in a stinking white man's prison in a far-off land called Florida. Obsidian eyes cut from one face to another. Broken Horn rose to speak.
I am of a mind with Bright Lance. For us to meekly let the white push us out, to be returned to San Carlos, is to die. Sickness will waste away our women and children, and we will catch the mosquito fever and die slaving in bean fields. I hate bean fields.
No! We cannot do that! I too hate bean fields, my old friend. But we must not take the fight to the whites off the reservation. That will bring the pony soldiers as certainly as Father Son follows the night. If we hope to keep our beloved mountains, we must not anger the soldiers. We must not leave the agency to fight. But Brightlance speaks well when he says we must punish those who trespass on our land. For now, we must satisfy ourselves with that.
To Cacheo Negro's surprise and satisfaction, he had no trouble achieving a consensus. The war societies of the White Mountain Apaches would soon ride to take retribution on the interlopers. Smoke Jensen raised a hand to signal a halt. Ahead, a huge dust cloud rose beyond a swell in the red-brown desert country. Smoke, Jeff, Walt, and Ty studied it a moment.
Think it could be a posse?
Too much dust for men on horseback. I'd say it's a trail drive.
Headed this way?
I didn't say it made sense. What say you and I step over and get a look?
Smoke and Jeff York advanced, crouched low to avoid showing up on the skyline. Both men bellied down near the crest of the rise and removed their hats. Jeff put a brass tubed spyglass to one eye, and Smoke studied the distance with a pair of field glasses. In the lead were three men, coiled lariats held loosely in their right hands. Behind, blurred by a reddish haze, they made out the horns of some 50 head of cattle.
Looks like you were right. Only I can't figure why they're headed toward Arizona.
Better crossing places into Mexico, I'd reckon.
Smoke Jensen took another look at the slow-moving cattle.
The border's less settled in Arizona than New Mexico or Texas. Even I know that if someone had cattle that didn't belong to him and wanted to dispose of them at a profit, that would be the way to go about it.
You think these cattle been rustled?
From the looks of those boys out there, they aren't regular hands. Not by the way they're dressed or by the way they're wearing their guns.
If we're fixing to do anything, we better know how many they have on flank and drag first.
My thinking exactly. We'll split up for a while. You take Reardon, I'll take Hardy. Let's ride around this gathering and see what we can.
They joined up half an hour later behind the herd.
Those beeves are wearing the Tucker brand. I recognized it right off.
The same Tucker I'm supposed to have killed?
Yep. Only those drovers aren't the sort Lawrence Tucker would have hired. Funny thing is, none of their horses are wearing the Tucker brand.
What say we swing in for a little talk?
One man rode around the herd, which had been turned in on itself for the night. Five more squatted around a hat-sized fire topped by a coffee pot. A large blaze had been started to cook on, and all six looked up as strangers rode toward the camp.
Hello, the fire! That coffee I smell?
Yep! But we didn't brew up any extra!
Now that's mighty inhospitable in these parts, mister. Mind if we ride up a piece?
It's a free country!
Smoke and his companions made no move to tie the horses off to the picket line, dropping the reins to the ground. Smoke nodded to the cattle.
You're a far piece from the Tucker spread.
Who says we ride for that brand? Truth is, we bought these steers off him 3 days ago.
That would be kind of hard, wouldn't it? Considering that he's been dead better than a week.
The edgy rustler dropped his hand to the gun at his side. At once, the other four did the same. Smoke, Jeff, and Walt beat them all out. For a moment, they had a standoff. Then, the herd guard, a long, lean character with frizzy yellow hair, pounded toward him, his hand clawing at the butt of a Colt on his left hip. 6-4 apparently seemed mighty good odds to the talkative one, because he canted the muzzle of his six-gun downward slightly, and Smoke Jensen shot him through the chest before his hammer could fall. When the smoke settled, the cows were spread out every which way and four rustlers lay dead. The remaining herder, a bullet in his right shoulder, made plain his intentions, his good left arm raised way up high.
Sit down over there and I'll patch you up. Jeff, Walt, Ty, round up those cattle. I think it'd be a good gesture to return the herd to the widow of Lawrence Tucker. It might even go some way toward convincing her that I had nothing to do with the death of her husband.
Smoke examined the rustler's wound, prodded it, and cleaned it. Then he poured raw, stinging horse medicine in the hole.
God! God damn it! Oh!
I'll be damned. You got a tongue. Wanna tell me what the hell this was all about?
Oh, I don't know why I should tell you anything. I don't even know who you are.
I'm the man who let you live. Now, where were you taking those cattle?
As far as I can tell, it's none of your goddamn business.
They hang cattle rustlers.
Hey, Smoke, we got 23 head rounded up down by the creek.
Good. Jeff can hold them. You and Walt find the others.
Yeah, we're on it.
He called you Smoke. What's your other name?
Jensen.
Oh, Jesus, Smoke Jensen. Oh, shit. You gonna kill me, Jensen?
I might. I might let my friend Jeff. He's an Arizona Ranger. I might let Jeff just make sure you hang. Depends on how chatty you feel. What about those cows?
Well, we were taking them into Arizona and then into Mexico. The boss had a buyer all lined up.
Does boss have a name?
Yeah, sure. Only, I'd get myself killed for sure if I gave it to you.
You prefer hanging, huh?
Quint Stalker. He ramrods the outfit.
That ain't the end of it. Who's he working for?
British fella. Name, Benton, Howell.
A week and a half had passed since the terrible news of her husband's death had been brought to Martha Tucker. A lot had happened in that time, and she didn't know what to make of this latest development. Part of her wanted to believe, but another portion of her mind urged caution. The two men, one slightly older than the other who stood before, just might be seeking to gain her trust, catch her off guard, and drive them from the ranch entirely. She cut her sky blue eyes to her eldest son.
I believe them, Mama.
Tell me again how you came upon our cattle.
Well, ma'am, we were riding this way from over in Arizona. We came upon these six men working some 50 or so head of cattle. One of the men with us, an Arizona Ranger, recognized your brand. Also, that none of the drovers was the sort your late husband would have hired.
So we questioned them, and they lied to us. Said they bought the cattle off from your husband only 3 days before that.
How did you know that to be a lie?
Well, ma'am, we were over Socorro way when it happened, him getting shot.
Are you men employed somewhere?
Yes, ma'am, we are. Our boss was along with us. It was him said we should bring back your livestock.
Who is it you work for?
Well, now, it's Smoke Jensen.
What?
Fury burned in those cobalt eyes.
I don't believe it. Not that murdering, back-shooting bastard. Were you with him last week when he tried to burn down our barn?
Ma'am, please listen. Smoke Jensen didn't kill your husband. He'd never shoot a man in the back, no how. And he wasn't within 30 miles of this ranch any time last week. We was all up in the Cibola Range, dodging a posse.
Smoke Jensen is the finest man I know. He saved me from a life of crime and evil. I swear it, ma'am. I was a gunfighter and an outlaw. Smoke Jensen reformed me, and that's God's own truth.
How'd he do that?
Well, first he beat the living hell out of me. Only that wasn't enough, so later on he shot me. Said he spared my life because he saw a glimmer of good in me. So I'm asking you not to think harsh of Smoke Jensen. He could never kill a man in cold blood, believe me.
The return of our cattle, I must say, adds credence to your story. I thank you for that again. And thank your Mr. Jensen for me also. I'll have to think over what I have learned. Good day, gentlemen.
Sheriff Jake Reno wanted to hit that man more than he'd ever wanted to hit anyone. Mash those pursed, disapproving aristocratic lips into a goddamn bloody pulp. The lawman turned his face away to hide the fury that burned there.
You are to raise another posse and go back into those mountains and track down Smoke Jensen. Is that perfectly clear, Sheriff Reno?
Who am I gonna get?
Those that were with me have been talking around town. Not a soul will volunteer. They got the idea that Smoke Jensen is 10 foot tall, can shoot a mile with his 6 guns, and can disappear in a cloud.
Quint Stalker will provide you ample men, Sheriff.
Well, then why the hell didn't he just go after Jensen himself?
Because we want this done legally and properly. You are a lawman. Stalker is just my ranch foreman.
Sure, he's a gunfighter and an outlaw is more near the truth.
Yes, he is. And the reason he is not out openly hunting for Smoke Jensen is because everyone else knows it too. So use his men, Sheriff Reno, and bring me back the head of Smoke Jensen.
Giuseppe Baldoni could not believe his good fortune. Only a month after he, his wife, and 3 children had gotten off the boat from Napoli, he had become the proud owner of a truly magnificent tract of land in the far west. The nice man who had sold him the land, Dalton Wade, had also made arrangements for 2 wagons and all of the equipment Giuseppe would need to build his home. He had picked it all up in St. Louis, all paid for, part of a package. What Giuseppe Baldoni learned when he arrived in the White Mountains gave his shrewd Italian mind much food for thought. Small wonder the land sale presentation had offered such generous terms. No one had told Giuseppe that his neighbors would all be Injuns. From the start, they had not gotten on all that well, and eventually, he'd been told in no uncertain terms by the Apaches to leave or be prepared to die. He left. His wife and daughter in tears, his sons blinking unspoken questions at him, they loaded the wagons and drove off with only some clothing, food, and the rifle Giuseppe had purchased in St. Louis. Some were not as fortunate as Baldoni. Prospectors hired to pan a stream on the White Mountain Reservation, which was on land owned by a gentleman with 2 last names, did indeed find gold. And not flake gold either. Nuggets the size of a man's thumb, some even bigger. They would be found eventually, their bodies riddled with arrows, the nuggets jammed halfway down their throats. But Quint Stalker and his men weren't privy to that information as they busied themselves pounding claiming stakes into the ground under the morning sun, already made hot by the seared desert terrain. To keep his face out of Sicaro during this phase of the takeover, Benton Howe had dispatched Stalker and 3 of the outlaw leaders' men to the White Mountain Reservation. Stalker knew enough of the general plan to understand that this land would be taken from the Apaches and given over to white settlement. The first claims filed on it would be those of his bosses. It was a neat little scheme, and he considered it as he began to collect stones for a boundary marker.
Sure as hell's lonely up here, Quint. I thought there were supposed to be Apaches around.
They're around, Randy. We just don't see them. Apaches don't usually get seen unless they wants to.
Randy Sturgis screwed up his face.
Well, shit, Quint. What if these warriors?
Then I'd reckon is how we'd already be missing our hair.
Half an hour later, Quint Stalker rounded a bend in a creek with an armload of stones for the last marker. He came face to face with 2 startled Apache boys about 13 or 14 years of age.
Damnation.
The rocks hit the ground and the kids bolted like frightened deer. Quint's hand found the butt of his Merwin and Holbert.
Heads up, boys. We got us a couple of rabbit-sized bucks headed your way. Oh, nice shooting. Got them both.
Randy Sturgis ran up.
Never could abide a damn Apache kid.
Why's that, Quint?
They turn into growed-up Apaches. Who the hell was that?
Over there, in them deer berries by the stream. Something just moved.
They walked to the screen of vegetation, and Quint reached in. He yanked out an Apache girl of an age with the dead boys, her slim forearm firmly in his big-handed grasp.
Well, looky here. We got us some recreation.
I get seconds.
Quint and his men each visited the girl's body 2. She eventually passed out. Never heard the gunshot that robbed her of her life. Walt Reardon and Ty Hardy rode into the small valley with important news. They joined Smoke Jensen and Jeff York at a small smokeless fire and eagerly accepted 10 cups of steaming coffee.
The Widow Tucker was mighty grateful for the return of her cattle.
Walt told her we worked for you, Smoke. She flew off the handle at first, but calmed down some when Walt and me explained how you'd taken stock from the rustlers and sent us to bring them back.
Way I see it, she might even be willing to consider the chance you didn't kill her husband.
I think that's something worth looking into, Smoke.
When I can prove who did kill her husband, then I'll be glad to talk to the woman.
Wait a minute now. You need a secure place to operate from, right? My thinking is that the last place anyone would think to look for you has to be the ranch of the man you're accused of murdering.
You may have a point, Jeff. At least it might be worth looking into.
If a lawman vouches for you, and a famous Arizona Ranger at that, it might get the widow to see you in a different light.
You reckon handle this yourself?
Why not, Smoke? It's the strongest card we've got to play right now.
All right. Walt and Ty are gonna poke around a little, see if they can get a line on Stalker. I'm headed south for Sicaro. We'll meet in San Antonio 3 days from now. See what you can set up, Jeff.
Martha Tucker studied the silver badge pinned on the vest of Jeff York. He wore clothes a cut above the average range hand. He was well-spoken, and she had no doubt he was who he claimed to be. Still, she considered his proposal to be absolutely outlandish.
Mrs. Tucker, I've known Smoke Jensen for years, and all that time I've never known him to do a dishonorable thing. What motive would he have to kill a total stranger?
He was found beside my husband's body.
Unconscious, as I understand it. Tell me everything you know about what happened.
For the next 10 minutes, Martha Tucker related all that she had been told about her husband's death. Jeff York listened with intense interest. When she had finished, Jeff pondered for a moment before speaking.
I was taken with what Smoke told me. There's no doubt that someone arranged things to make him look guilty. For one thing, your husband was shot with a .45. Smoke carries twin .44s, always has.
Go on.
Smoke was found with the single holster strapped around his waist. Yet, when he escaped from the jail, his own guns and their holsters were found in the sheriff's desk. How would you suppose they got there?
I have no idea. It doesn't appear that the sheriff, or the man he sent out here to tell me about it, has been entirely honest with me.
Not in the least.
Why would you come over here from Arizona to look into it?
Like I told you before, Mrs. Tucker, Smoke Jensen is my friend. We fought together before, and he's always stood up for what's right. At least, couldn't you hear him out? Give him an opportunity to tell you what he knows.
Yes, I suppose it's the least I can do.
Cacheo Negro's face darkened with the fury of his outrage. They'd been running off the interlopers for 3 suns now. To come upon such a scene as this threatened to make him break his resolve to keep their actions on the reservation. 3 children killed without reason. The girl ravaged repeatedly before she died. He looked up sharply at Tall Hat.
I know their village, their families.
You will carry the message to them.
Yes. They will want to come and care for their children.
We will find the white men who did this. Their end will not be easy.
Cacheo Negro's men went out looking for signs. They soon found plenty in the cairns of stones and stakes that marked the boundary of a claim. The warriors scattered these items over a wide area. Faint traces of shod hoof prints pointed the way the interlopers had left the creek bank.
We will follow.
And if they leave the reservation?
Blackknife looked back at the ruined face of the dead little girl.
We will go after them.
The sign left by the white men meandered through the White Mountains, roughly eastward, and downhill toward the land of the Zuni and Tua people. Diligently, the Apaches followed. They came upon the side of a carefully disrupted night camp.
These men know us. They know we followed them. They took care to see that no sign of their camp could be noted. But our eyes are clever. This fire burned 2 sleeps ago. By tomorrow, we might catch them. Yeah!
Wink Winkler mopped his brow with a large bandana.
I'm sure glad we're shy of them mountains. I was beginning to see an Apache behind every tree.
There ain't that many Apaches around these parts, Wink. Though I'll admit I'm glad they'll probably not follow us into New Mexico.
The hard cases sat on a red-orange mesa that overlooked the Rio San Francisco outside Apache Creek, New Mexico. Quint Stalker stood with them, considering their remarkably good luck in escaping the Apaches, who had no doubt set out after them.
We're not out of it yet, boys. We'd best put more miles between us and the White Mountains.
Oh, we're safe enough, Quint. These horses gotta have a rest. Me too. From up here, you can see for miles. No way any Injuns could sneak up on us.
Quint tossed that one around a while in his head.
All right. We can rest the horses and catch our breath. But no fires after dark here. And be sure what you do build is small and smokeless.
For all their precautions, Quint Stalker and the three members of his gang learned the extent of their error in judgment shortly before midnight.
Huh? What the hell?
The first volley of arrows failed to find flesh, but it awakened the targets. By weak starlight, Randy Sturgis made out the familiar silhouette of an Apache.
Oh my God! It's Apaches! Quint! Quint, it's Indians!
I know that, dammit! Make a run for the horses!
Indians ain't supposed to fight at night!
Somebody forgot to tell these bucks!
Fire at them, dammit!
Quint Stalker's .44 Merwin and Halbert produced a flare of yellow-orange that illuminated more of the warriors. The others added their firepower to his.
Ow! My arm! There's an arrow shot clean through it!
Help Wink up on his horse!
The white men rode fearfully away toward the trail that led off the mesa. Behind him, Cuchillo Negro raised his trade musket to his shoulder and squeezed off a round. The big 64 caliber ball drove a hand-width chunk of shattered spine right through the lungs and heart of Randy Sturgis. Back arching suddenly, Randy did a backflip over his mount's rump. He landed hard on the reddish soil of the nameless butte that overlooked the San Francisco River and Apache Creek. Two of Quint Stalker's ne'er-do-well hard cases lounged in front of the Tio Pepe Cantina in the little town of San Antonio, New Mexico. They passed a bottle of tequila from hand to hand, drank, spat tobacco juice, and rolled smokes. One of them, Charlie Bascom, perked up somewhat when a stranger rode into town on a big-chested roan.
Hey, don't he look like that feller we supposed to be hunting down?
Barrel-chested Buck Ropin shook his head.
I don't think so. Last I heard, he was supposed to be up north a ways in the Cibolas. Besides, after what I heard what happened to them boys that went along with the sheriff, I'm not so certain I want to tangle with the likes of Smoke Jensen.
Turning yeller, Buck. There's two of us. I say us two can take any Smoke Jensen or the devil himself if it came to that.
After the stranger entered the General Mercantile across the way, Charlie kept on worrying aloud. Like a big old tabby with a little itty-bitty mouse, they finally wore down the caution so wisely held by Buck Ropin. Rising to his boots, Buck adjusted the drape of his cartridge belt across the solid slab of lard on his big belly and nodded in the direction of the general store.
Well, I reckon you're gonna keep on about that until we know for certain, ain't you?
Wouldn't do no harm to get a closer look. Then if it is Smoke Jensen, we got his butt and $1,000 reward.